Israel. You are listening to the Tamar Yonah Show here on IsraelNewsTalkRadio.com. And we are live if you're listening on Sunday, the 21st of April. This is a special Passover week special show because this is going to be playing all through the week of Passover while most of the staff is on is off for the holidays and spending time with their families. And today joining me on the show, I have as a co-host joining me, Matt Zucker. Matt Zucker was a former radio show host with us on a very wonderful show called Lighten Up, and he's here joining me today. Matt, hey, how you doing, Matt?
Tamar, as well as can be expected, thank you very much for inviting me. I hope you're doing well.
I'm doing well. Now, if anyone knows the map of Israel, Matt is talking to us from the northern part of Israel, not too north, but more north than where I am in the Jerusalem area. And you have a son that serves in the army. I have two sons that were serving in this war as well. And so
Correct.
We both really have skin in the game, like everybody here in Israel, because even if you don't have a child or a husband or a brother, then your dentist is, or your school teacher is, or whatever. Everyone is connected here. It's one big family. And so we are all very concerned about, of course, what's happening here. We're a small country. And how is your son, by the way, for everybody to hear?
Thank God. He's doing okay. He has to report back in a few weeks. But he's enjoyed a couple months off.
Right. Okay. And the same with my sons. They're also probably going to be called up in a few weeks as well. I think we lost Matt for a second. We're going to try to get him back. And in the meantime, I just want to tell you that we're going to be speaking in a few minutes with Jonathan Pollard, who's going to be giving us a take on the relationship between Israel and the Biden administration in the White House and the hindrance, that's a kind word that I'm using, unfortunately, letting us win this war. And if you talk to any sane Israeli, which is the majority of the country, don't listen to all the left-wing noise. They have money, and so they make noise. But the majority of the country is upset. They know that if we did not give humanitarian aid, and meaning food and fuel, to the enemy, this war would have been over in 2 months, maximum. 2 months it would have been over. They would have surrendered. But when you fuel and you feed your enemy, then you just keep them going on and on and on. And that's exactly what's happening. So he's going to be talking a little bit about that as well and some new developments. And then we're going to be speaking also with a veteran Israeli journalist and filmmaker who's going to be talking about also how Israel listening to the international community trying to appease them, we have become our own worst enemy. We'll be talking about that as well and some other developments and news stories. Matt, are you back with us?
I am back.
Okay. All right. So I just introduced the guest that we're having on today. And is there anything you want to start out with, or do you want me to go into some of the latest news stories? What do you want to do?
Whatever you want to start with. There's so many things that I would like to discuss. I wouldn't even know where to begin.
So okay, so let's start with last week on Thursday night. Israel had been saying that Israel would retaliate from that unprecedented attack against Israel. By the way, it was the largest attack in modern history of one country against another country, with over 300 drones, missiles, etc., attacking Israel. And yet we were able to fend off with the help of God and the tools of the United States, Israel. Well, I should say Israel, and then the United States and France and Britain, also shooting down these bombs that were flying through the air, trying to kill innocent men, women, and children randomly. Just kill. That's all it wanted to do. Israel said it would retaliate. It said that it would most likely do so after the Passover holiday. And I need people to understand here what happens. What happens on Israel in Israel on the right before the Passover holiday? Around half the country leaves, and not because of war. They just want to go away to a hotel for a week and have a Passover holiday with the entire family, because we live in small apartments here, most of us, and a lot of people don't have place for everybody, and there are very, very good deals overseas that include flights, that include all the food you could want, hotel rooms, and then you can get your whole darn, you know, extended family all together. And
you don't have to clean your house for 4 days.
That's right. All right. You have to scrub like I do, and all the cuts on my fingers from scrubbing with steel wool, etc. But in any case, I have like two kids that, you know, went out because their in-laws wanted the family together, and so they invited them. One is in one country in Europe, and another one is in another country in Europe, and another one's in the States. I actually have three. So, but I still have kids here, thank God, and they'll be joining us for the Seder. And so, you know, if God forbid there is a war, the sky's closed. You cannot land planes. You cannot take off. And people would be pretty, pretty upset that they couldn't leave and join their families. And so the government said we were going to do it afterwards, but it was a good ploy because no one expected it. On the Thursday night before, Israel supposedly, because the government has not said that we've done it, attacked one of the facilities in Iran that is had a lot of missiles that they were going to be using against Israel, and where they have one of their nuclear facilities as well. And they've got a few different places, I think five different places in Iran. And this
right, it was like attacked. Near a nuclear facility, not on a nuclear
yes.
facility.
And I want to say something here, and I was watching this on Fox News, actually. It's very interesting that, you know, the Biden administration, which claims that it's Israel's friend and they've got our back, they're the ones who said that Israel did this. Now, if Israel did not say that it did this, and you're Israel's ally, you should not be telling Israel's enemy and the world that Israel did this.
Well, listen, do you remember the
That's
Obama
not a friend.
Administration
That's not an ally.
Telling the world the SUSNET hack that Israel did?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that's
yeah.
the Ramo.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not how a friend and an ally react acts with another friend. So if we did it, okay? I mean, pretty much everyone thinks that we did it. But it doesn't matter. That's not
wink,
the point.
Wink.
That's not the point. So that's not the point. That's not the point.
I
All
understand.
Right. So it's so let me just read you some things that I've seen flying up here on WhatsApp groups and other news items. It says it is forbidden to impose sanctions on the Israel Defense Force. Is this after U.S. President Joe Biden said that he is going to withhold specific arms and weapons for a specific group in Israel. They're called the Netzach Yehudi. Netzach Yehuda. This is a religious group of soldiers that have gone in and have to do terribly hard cleanup work of terrorists. And people are weighing in on the issue that who is Joe Biden to say who we can give arms to that we need in order to defend Israel. And one of these comments was, it is forbidden to impose sanctions on the Israel Defense Forces in recent weeks. While our soldiers are fighting the monsters of terror, the intention is to impose sanctions on this IDF unit. Absurdity and low values, the government will act against these moves. This is what some people are saying. And it's another one, the decision to impose American sanctions on the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces, while Israel's fighting for its existence is complete madness.
Can I just say something?
Yeah.
What makes it particularly odious is the amount, the number of terrorists in Judea and Samaria who turn out to be security officers for the Palestinian Authority, who are trained by the United States, who are armed by the United States. That guy a few weeks ago who they had to send an Apache helicopter after because they couldn't find him was trained in Jordan by the Americans. There was another recent attack by an ambush set up by an American-trained Palestinian security officer. There's tons of them. Can't mess with the Palestinian Authority's money. Oh, no. It is. It stinks to high heaven, and the United States State Department has a long, long history of being, let's say, at best hostile to Israel.
Well, we know that State Department is very anti-Semitic. Yeah, but yeah. I want to say here that first of all, I want to put down this precedent that here, Israel generally We love and appreciate the American people. What I'm 100%. Saying here is against the Biden administration. We have to make that specific. We are not against the American people or against America, because America is a wonderful country with beautiful ideas of freedom, and it's offered the Jewish people and everybody around the world a place to be able to be free with your religion, to fulfilling your potential, etc. And we really appreciate that. We're talking about the Biden administration. Let me just continue the story. Commentary I was just reading. It says, we warned that the Biden administration sanctions against Israel and against people who are fighting to defend it will continue to the IDF and the entire state of Israel. This is part of a planned move to force the state of Israel to agree to the establishment of a Palestinian state and abandon Israel's security. Now, we understand that this is happening also because Joe Biden wants to get the votes of those in Michigan and those around America that if he takes the side of the poor, poor Gazans, and we have to help these people, and we're showing that we're even-handed, we're not pro-Israel, we're not pro-Hamas, whatever. I'm kind of like making this very general. But he wants to encourage votes his way, and so Israel's suffering. We are dying and we are bleeding because Biden thinks that this is his strategy to be able to get more votes for the upcoming U.S. elections. Weigh in?
Yeah, generally speaking, but I'm at the point where clearly that man is not in charge and he's not doing anything, but I guess we can just say the Biden administration. You know, I know Jonathan Pollard has taken the call into the O Biden administration. He is like wearing the Johnny Bravo suit and just saying what they want him to say. But other than that, you're spot on. It's just, we're living in bizarro times. And I know I have been reaching out. The worse it gets with the American administration, the more people reach out to me to tell me that, you know, that's not who we are, right? The American people. And we appreciate it. You know, you see what's going on in the news with what was happening in Columbia University this week, you know, this mass movement, but it really isn't. I don't think it's really that mass. I think it's well-funded.
It's well-funded. And I think that the younger generation today is totally, I look at them as zombies. That's what I look at them as. They don't think.
Yes.
They're just the very definition
of useful idiot.
Yeah. Here's another interesting thing that's coming up in the Telegram services as well. The fact that Israel's minister Gallant has not yet responded to the U.S. boycott of the Netzach Yehuda battalion is an unparalleled disgrace. It also shows that his commitment is to Washington before the IDF fighters. We have to understand that there are some Israeli politicians, and Gantz was one of them, who's representing the opposition as well. But although he's in the government right now, but he's still the other side of Bibi, I should say, of Netanyahu. He was called in to the United States of America to have meetings with the government there, and this was against the desire and the permission of the Prime Minister of Israel. And you wonder, why is America calling in one of our cabinet members to talk to them privately against the wishes of our Prime Minister? It's like they're grooming him, and it's pretty obvious that they want him to take over, because America, under the Biden administration, wants to see a Palestinian state. And so they're trying to get Bibi out. They've been trying to do this before October 7th, and they're still trying to do it, and they're grooming our candidates that are going to be beholden to Washington. Unfortunately, Prime Minister Netanyahu also gives in to Washington a lot, but I wouldn't say he's beholden to it, but he does give in to it. And he's starting only now to kind of dig his heels in and say, listen, we're going into Rafah, whether, you know, what anybody says, and we have to do what's good for the state of Israel, and we're going to stop Iran. But we really have to pray for the Prime Minister, because I am not a huge fan of Bibi, because he doesn't as Jonathan Pollard, who's our guest, is he says he doesn't pull the trigger, but I'm hoping we have to pray for that our prime minister receives the wisdom and the courage that he needs in order to resist the pressures from the international community and to do what is right for the Jewish people and what God wants. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, I blame him and the War Cabinet for our pickle right now. I mean, we're as close to in a quagmire as you can imagine, because it all started with giving aid at the very beginning. You know, and Benjamin Netanyahu, I mean, he's tried to hold the line, you know, but when his back is to the wall, his red lines are a little bit, I think, too far away. You know, there's going to be no electricity, no water, no aid. Okay, so we're going to have to send water, electricity, and aid and have a humanitarian corridor. He backtracks all the time. And you know, the Americans have this pipe dream of the two-state solution, and I don't know they're not dealing with reality. No one wants it. The Arabs who call themselves Palestinians don't even want it. It's dead. It won't happen in Israel. The only few people who really wanted it were converted on October 7th. And the more they talk about it, they beclown themselves to our neighbors. And it does no one any good. But again, Netanyahu should have held the line. And had they not had a drop of fuel, a molecule of oxygen or anything from day one, I don't believe that Gaza would be a combat zone right now. I mean, I don't know, but, you know, and hopefully we would have the hostages back, because if Hamas can't breathe in the tunnel, you know, what are they going to do?
We don't even know how many hostages are still alive.
At this point, right.
Yeah, some people are saying even only 20 out of all of those hundreds are alive. Only 20 now. That's what the guess is. We don't have any information. The Red Cross has never even gone in to check on them or anything. And, you know, the fact that not one Gazan has come and told us where they are, that not one Gazan when the Nazis were in France, right, when they took over France, you had a resistance. They were called the Partisans. They hid in the forest and they fought the Nazis. There's no resistance in Gaza against the Hamas, and they call the poor Gazans. All these Gazans are for the Hamas.
Exactly, 100%.
And
when
we
feed
them and fuel them, then this is an atrocity. It's an atrocity, and that the president of the United States would say to fuel and feed terrorists is shameful, to say the least. So, all right, we have Jonathan Pollard. I don't even have to give him an introduction. Joining us right now, and Jonathan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being on your show.
Thank you for coming on. So we've had some developments lately with the Biden administration. Now they're saying now that they're going to be forbidding certain weapons to be coming to one of our IDF battalions, and all sorts of other edicts that Biden is putting on Israel. Do you want to weigh in on any of these issues?
Sure. As far as the Biden administration's characterization of the Netzach Yehuda battalion as a unit that has engaged in war crimes, let me just say this: I'm attempting right now to become an honorary member of the battalion. Hmm. I think that as many Israeli citizens as possible should try to do that. My stepson-in-law is a member of the battalion, and he's a wonderful guy. I know his colleagues, his battlemates, and they're all wonderful, good Jews who are trying to defend the land. A few months ago, when the issue of the condition that was placed on our access, further access to American arms, hinged on whether or not we conformed to the Biden administration's concept of humanitarian war, I told everybody at the time that it was a setup, that there was no way in the world that they were going to find us innocent. We were guilty as charged. And I just didn't know which unit they were going to go after. I think they're going after, it's either the Yamam or the Yasham unit also, as well as the Netzach Yehudi unit. I'm sorry, but, you know, as far as the moral equivalence or equivalency that the American administration is trying to make right now, it's really chutzpahdik. Here's a government, here's a country that engaged in such war crimes in Korea, in Vietnam, in Afghanistan, and in Iraq, that for them to have the chutzpah to say to us that they stand in judgment of us, this is obscene. It goes beyond just being surreal. It's obscene. And so I think, apart from making personal gestures, like the one I'm attempting to make by becoming perhaps an honorary member of the battalion, the government, despite the fact that Congress has just announced, I think it's between $20 or $23 billion appropriations for Israel, apart from that, leave that aside, the first thing our government should do, or should have done, is call the American ambassador in and told him, pack your bags and leave. And by the way, take the American security coordinator with you, because it's this lieutenant general, American lieutenant general, that's been going after our units, going after individual people in the territories. He's been going after our government. Basically, this security coordinator, this lieutenant general, is nothing more than an extension of the PA. That's all. He's not on our side. He's playing for the other side. So I think, as I said in conclusion, apart from making personal gestures, you know, everybody says, whenever I see guys with the Golani patch, I always yell at them in ways, Golani Shelanu. Okay. Well, maybe it's Netzach Yehuda Shelanu now. Maybe we should do that. And let the Americans know exactly what the people of Israel think about their judgment of our Chayalim.
That's beautiful.
But
our
apart from that, as far as the government is concerned, something more substantial than wiping the spit off our face and going on, carrying on as usual, is absolutely essential. And I guess there are the only two things I can think of right now that would finally get their bloody attention is to tell the ambassador, whom I affectionately refer to as Jew Lou, to get this guy out of the country, and also to get the lieutenant, American lieutenant general, who's the head of the security coordination group, out of this country as well. Declare them persona non grata, get them out of the country, and tell the Americans, basically, you want to do this to us, there will be a penalty.
Okay, Jonathan, I want to interrupt you because I know that our listeners are asking a question, but we need America. Who's going to give us weapons and the bombs and everything that we need?
Look, I've been spending the past, 6 months, beating the drum of military self-sufficiency. Someone told me, okay, say we can make our own artillery and mortars and battle rifles and uniforms and tactical communications gear and all that stuff, but we can't make an F-35 stealth fighter. And I disproved them. We can. We can do it with a collaborative project with the Indians. The Indians have a stealth fighter right now, and they need our help. So why not? If we with the Indians can make a very fine stealth fighter, which I believe could be made just as good as the F-35, what's the problem? We can make any type of ballistic missile we want, either ground or air launched. They always point to the F-35 as an example of why we can't be militarily independent. And that's wrong. We can be. It's a matter of mind, of the mind. We still have a galut mentality. And we have to get over that. It's not just, you know, it's not just whether we can make equipment. It's whether we can use the equipment effectively. And this is the biggest problem we have to overcome. We can make every single piece of equipment that we need, but if we don't have the heart and the mind to actually use them effectively to decisively destroy our enemies, then what's the point? And this is what we have to start discussing. What's the point? We have the weapons right now. We have enough supplies right now. We have enough trained manpower right now to eliminate Hamas, eliminate Hezbollah, and turn Iran into a nuclear slag heap. We can do all of that. And then what's going to happen the morning after? Yeah, okay, we'll be condemned by the UN. So turn the page. As long as our enemies are afraid of us, I don't want them to like us. As long as they're afraid of us, then I'm happy. Leave us alone. That's all we've asked. Just leave us alone. And unfortunately, the only way we're going to secure that kind of freedom is by decisively eliminating, not managing, not kicking the can down the road, not mowing the grass, but decisively eliminating our enemies. Once we get that through our head, then we'll be okay.
Jonathan, I want to ask you if I can. You know, they talk about, you know, Iran, it's got its proxies, it's got the Hezbollah, the Hamas, etc. And I'm thinking, like, why doesn't Israel have proxies? Why aren't we funding, or maybe we are, but why aren't we funding and really pushing the people's revolution in Iran to go against its government, to make the government problems. Wait a second. Wait a second. Wait. To really, like, that would be a proxy of ours. And then also work with other countries that are bordering Iran from the east, where they don't expect an attack, and help those countries that feel threatened by Iran or have their interests, and work through them as well. Why does it, you know, Iran shouldn't know where the attack is coming from either. What do you think?
First of all, none of the regional countries are actually going to do anything to Iran. This is number, they're scared. And that's primarily because they know the Americans won't be there to help them. They also don't have any confidence or faith in us. Yes, they know we have the capability to do things. And yes, we just demonstrated an ability to do something in Isfahan. Yes, was it dramatic? Yes, it was. We took out an air defense system. Okay. That doesn't mean we took out the Natanz nuclear establishment, the nuclear facility. Basically, this is on us now. If we want to help the Iranian people overthrow the mullah's regime, then unfortunately we're going to have to fight a decisive war against, well, Iran's nuclear establishment, which we can do, against their energy production facilities, which we can, power production facilities, which we can do. We can eliminate their oil and gas export centers. We can do that. We can destroy their military-industrial complexes. We can do that. And, of course, we can also decapitate the regime. We can do all of that in one day. One day. And if that happens, the regime will be unable to put down the revolt that will surely come following that attack. Mm-hmm. So if we want to help the Iranian people, well, first of all, you have to remember there is no Iran. There's Persia and the Persians. But the rest of the country are basically made up of minorities that want to throw the Persian yoke off.
Right.
These are people like the Arabs, the Baluchis, the Azerbaijanis.
Right.
This is not our problem. Our problem is to take care of that Persian core that is coming for our lives. So can we do it now? Yes. Is there anybody else that can do it? No. And as far as the Americans are concerned, all they'll be doing is screaming and yelling, we had nothing to do with it. There's nobody else in the world right now that can do what we can do within 24 hours if we had the will. That's the key thing. That's why I said before, we can have all the equipment in the world that we need, that we need, but if we don't have the will, then it's finished. I mean, what's the point?
Let me ask you this question.
So you're right. As far as getting the situation turned around where we can allow the people of Iran to stage an effective and successful uprising. But it's going to take one day worth of fireworks to do it. And that doesn't mean, you know, knocking off an air defense radar here or making some demonstration over the skies of Tehran. It's going to be bloody.
Yeah, it's going to be a death blow.
It's going to be very bloody.
Yeah.
And unfortunately for Iran, it's going to mean nuclear war as well.
I want to say, when I say death blow also, I'm not saying to kill all the people of Iran, God forbid. But what I'm thinking of is you hit them where the government cannot survive, where it's a death blow for the government, for the mullahs. And if they were to hit the oil fields there, there's a problem that some people are saying because, well, China and Russia are have their interests there. And then you've got a third world war. You've got
The opposite.
So say, please.
Quite the opposite. The Russians have their hands full right now with Ukraine. And I think as the Ukrainians have already demonstrated, the Russians are not 10 feet tall. That's number one. Number two, as far as the Chinese are concerned, they are not interested right now in any demonstration of their power projection. Right now, that country has got one goal in mind, and that's to make sure they don't crater economically. They're not interested in getting involved militarily anywhere other than the South China Sea and maybe the Taiwan Straits and maybe the border they have with India. Anything else is basically just too much for them. So their economic, the essentials that they need right now politically are to intimidate Taiwan to make sure that they don't declare independence, unilateral declaration of independence, and to intimidate the countries both in Northeast and Southeast Asia, and South Asia for that matter. They're still regionally focused. As far as their dependence on oil is concerned, well, sorry. That's not our concern. The Saudis have enough spare production that they can cover right now whatever the Chinese need. Okay, so it's not just Iran that's key as far as the Chinese are concerned for their oil and gas. There are many, many other countries that can fill in for Iran if we take them off the map.
So essentially, Israel just has to realize that we've got the ruby red slippers.
Pardon?
I'm just saying, so Israel basically has to realize that we've got the ruby red slippers. We just need to use them.
We just have to click them.
Yeah.
We just have to click them. And that's all. That's why I said before, the key element of our victory is our will to win with God's help.
Amen.
And there's no one that can stand against us in the region. Look, I've talked to Saudi friends of mine and Emirati friends, business partners of mine, and I've asked them, why don't you want to sign a peace treaty with us? You know, not just joining the Abraham Accords, but, you know, the Saudi Arabia has been at war with us, actually, since 1948. So just, you know, declaring peace would be a good move. And their answer has been amazing. What they've said is, we don't trust you to defend your... If we don't trust you enough that you can defend your own interests, how can we possibly depend on you as an ally? That, and I couldn't say anything. I had to admit they were right. If we cannot act independently in defense of our own national security interests, then why should any other country want to be a friend of ours or an ally of ours and become vulnerable to perhaps an Iranian or an ISIS or a Salafist counterattack?
Well, Jonathan,
for being friends of ours. So
I'm sorry, this is...
the best way for us to make friends in the region, and I believe we can, beyond the Abraham Accord countries, and we're speaking specifically of Saudi Arabia now, is to take Iran off the map. And if we do that, then we're fine. We will be fine. Then the Saudis don't have to worry about the so-called Palestinians. They don't have to worry about that. They don't have to. As it is right now, they didn't want the Palestinian issue attached to their negotiations with us until the old Biden administration, and Blinken in particular, rammed it down their throats. And as these guys explained to me, from my Saudi friends, explained to me, we can't be seen as any less pro-Palestinian than the Americans. So if it hadn't been for the Americans and their meddling, we would have had some agreement with the Saudis already that didn't include the Palestinians whatsoever. But now there's nothing short of us taking Iran off the map that's going to satisfy the Saudis. Mm. That's just the way it is.
Jonathan, Matt has one last question for you. Go ahead, Matt.
Jonathan, thanks for your time. I find it astounding that our high command, the IDF high command, still, even after October 7th, doesn't understand the nature of our enemy. And the question is, how do you make that change? How do you get rid of them? How do you either get them to see the light? I just don't know how you wind up with people who are willing to use the tools that we have to finish this and finish it fast.
The issue here, when I first came back to Israel 4 years ago, I wasn't talking about judicial reform. That wasn't even on the political agenda at the time. What I was pushing at the time, and I still am, is military reform. We have a high command here that is in many respects similar to the high court in that it's a far left, woke, progressive institution that is self-sustaining. They select the people that move up through the glass ceiling beyond Takaluf. And unless and until we develop a high command, the general staff, that reflects the interests and the philosophies and the doctrines of a Jewish state, then we're not going to progress anywhere on any level in any direction. To do that, you either need something from the ground up, where you have, almost 40 to 45% of the officer corps is now national religious. So you think that if they staged a protest of some sort, it would rattle the high command and, we would get some reform. But fortunately or unfortunately, the national religious guys that are in the overrepresented in the combat units love our country. They love it. They're willing to sacrifice for it. They're not about to play politics like the left does with the national security of our country. So ground up won't work. So we're looking at a top-down revolution, so to speak. And what that means is the next election. I keep telling people, you're complaining about the government on the political establishment on any number of issues. Well, Einstein once said that a definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different outcome.
Right.
Okay. Well, this is the analogy I use when I ask people, as I do all the time in speeches, how many of you voted for the same party, centrist party, so to speak, that you've been voting for since time immemorial? So everybody puts their hands up. I said, well, there's the problem. You keep voting for the same bloody politicians and the same bloody party. We need to get them out. Get them out. And we need basically a nationalist government. I'm not interested in forming a centrist government. I'm not interested in reaching out to the left as our brothers, quite the contrary. I'm interested in forming a nationalist government that will finally create a Jewish state that is, a Jewish army, rather, that is worthy of us. We don't have that now, and the only way I can see us finally gaining that is by voting in a party or parties that will actually accomplish that task. And frankly, the Likud will not do that. And no one from the Likud to the left will do that. And I think that after October 7th, people understand that, yes, even if you have to hold your nose for parties on the so-called far right, you'd best do that or get used to having more October 7th. That's the bottom line.
Well, we're waiting for you to go into politics.
If you want to save a country for your family and for yourself, for that matter, you don't vote Likud. You don't vote for Benny Gantz. You don't vote for Gadi Eisenkot. You sure as hell don't vote for Yair Lapid. You don't vote for any of these people or any of the parties they represent. You want some change? I mean, I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback from this, but you need to bring in somebody like Lieberman. You need to bring in people right smack in the center of the government, people like Bezalel Smotrich and, yes, even Itamar Ben-Gvir. Every one of these guys has problems, one way or the other, but they are the best that we have right now for a revolution in our high command. Unless we vote people like this in and turn this country around, we're going to just keep experiencing disasters one right after the other.
I don't know. It just seems like it's just regurgitated.
It's capable of saving the country. It isn't. These are all Osloists that we have in the high command. Osloists.
Yeah, I would include Lieberman in that, though. I don't trust Lieberman. He was part of it also. I would love to see you and Moshe Feiglin and Itamar Ben-Gvir and some more, you know, right-wing and religious parties coming together. That would be fantastic.
The political math requires Lieberman being part of this. Part. I didn't say all of it, but part of it. And you have to remember that he actually bucked the system to get a missile command into our army that the Army High Command opposed tooth and nail.
You know what? I'm not going to argue about Lieberman now because, really, it's a whole other show. We could do that sometime if you want.
No, it is. But what I'm trying to show is that unless we get away from the normal what I call the normal politicians, such as Gantz, such as Eisenkot, such as even people like Gallant or Bennett, for that matter, or even Yossi Cohen or any of these people, we have to have a radical change in government in order to effect a reform of the military high command.
Right, so we need some new blood in there, not the same old regurgitated, recycled
blood,
politicians. That means that you need to get in there. I know that you don't like to do that, but you need to get in there. And we need bring some other good blood with you. Bring some new blood in there.
I'm ready to do it.
Yalla.
I am ready to do it. And I said whenever this next election is coming, I will be involved directly in that.
God willing. That would be good. We need some clear thinking like you and someone who's not afraid.
I just have one problem.
And?
I promised my wife as she was dying that I would not compromise on core issues at all. I can't compromise.
You can get elected on not compromising. I think that's what people want. People want someone strong that's not going to compromise. They want someone who's going to tell them like it is, and that's what's going to be, and not, you know, empty campaign promises.
You know, I keep thinking that the Americans want us to have an election here. And if we actually did, they might wind up with something that makes them miss Bibi.
Well, we shall wait and see. When the new elections comes, we'll have you on again, God willing. And we'll hope that you'll bring some good people with you as well.
I hope so.
Jonathan Pollard, God bless you. Thank you for your clear thinking and your not being afraid to say it, because people need to hear. People need to hear.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Tamar. I wish you and your listeners a Chag Sameach.
Thank you. To you as well. Pesach Sameach V'Kasher. Thank you. That was Jonathan Pollard, everybody. God bless him. And we're going to be going to another guest in another couple of minutes. I wanted to, what did you think about what was discussed, Matt?
Look, what can I say? It makes perfect sense to me, but I believe that we will get there, but I think it will probably have to be so. To get to that point for Israel to scream for that, it probably will get a little bit worse. You know, this has been dragging on for 7 months now. It's probably going to drag on for well into the summer. People are getting sick of it. So, you know, as I was saying that, I think that, at least I'd like to hope that if we went to elections, you know, like the Americans were trying to upset the apple cart and overturn Bibi and put in Gantz. Well, what if they forced elections on us and what we elected really makes them miss Benjamin Netanyahu because it winds up with a Moshe Feiglin or a Ben-Gavir or somebody who's going to be serious about telling the Americans to pound sand and we're going to finish this war fast.
You know, it sounds to me like something I saw. I think it was also on Fox News this week that they were saying that even if there were a new election. No, sorry, I think it was on Channel 14 here in Israel. They said the left was saying here that even if we went to new elections and you lost and we got in another right wing government, would you accept the results? And he said no.
Oh yeah. That was on Channel 14. I saw that.
Said no. Okay. All right. So like, what do you know, Democrats, like, just because you don't like the government, you got to wait your 4 years. You can't just have an election whenever you want to have it.
Listen, you know, the Kaplan crew is out in force now, and they've really politicized the whole, ceasefire now, hostage deal now. And I was watching, you know, an interview with one of the participants from the latest protest, and they start talking about this like fascist government that is destroying democracy. And I'm sitting here going, like, you mean this government that won the election with like a mandate size win?
Only democracy. And
you know what? The moderators, you know, and the reporters never ask that question of these people ever.
Well, because most of the media here in Israel is very left. So there,
yeah,
you know.
Of course.
All right, we're going to go to our next guest. We have joining us Yecheskel Lang. He is a veteran Israeli journalist and filmmaker. Welcome to the show, Yecheskel.
Hi, Tamar. Hi, Matt. Thank you very much for having me on.
It's great to have you
on. Hello.
All right, so a lot of the people here in Israel are saying that if we did not listen to the Biden administration and the international community yelling at us and threatening us and putting us in the Hague for genocide, all these ridiculous things, and that we have to feed and fuel our enemies. They're saying that if we fought the war that rationally, without feeding and fueling your enemies, these Nazis, these modern-day Nazis, we would have won the war in 2 months. They would have fell to their knees. They would have surrendered. It would have been over. And right. Instead, we're seeing this going on. This is the longest war that Israel's ever fought since the War of Independence. So what's your take on this situation?
First of all, I agree with you that I don't know any other country in the world that acts like Israel does with the support of its own enemies. No other country does that. It might be some kind of twisted kind of Christian, sorry to say it, but help, you know, turn the other cheek or help your enemies kind of values, which are certainly not Jewish values. But, you know, if we want to go deep enough, there are even Jewish roots or Israeli roots to the Hamas. The Hamas was supported by the Shabak when they first came about, mainly as an alternative to the PLO. Israel was opposing the PLO, and they saw the Hamas as a potential solution. And so we basically supported them in the beginning, and then we turned them into this huge monster. So before we become afraid of them, we should realize that we have a great role in creating them in the first place. On top of all that, there's all the food that we send them, all the free electricity, all the free water. I don't know of any other country in the world that does that. Plus the money, we allow the Qatar money to go in to Hamas, and to the PA, we send over billions of dollars in tax revenues that quote unquote belong to them. But since they have murdered so many Israelis, why don't we just give that money to the
families
to the Israeli victims? Yeah, yeah, that's where the money should be going.
But people need to realize that this is all international pressure on Israel to give them money, to fuel them, to feed them. This is not something that Israel wants to do. It's just that this was the agreements that are international.
It's true that we're under pressure, but we can also push back, and we should realize that we are a lot stronger than we think we are. You know, Israelis are so afraid of going against the world. We can't go against the whole world. The whole world's against us, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, our history shows that we've gone against the world many, many times, and we've succeeded. Just recently, it was shown that in the UN, there are more resolutions against the state of Israel than against all the other countries of the world combined. And that's happened a few years in a row. And yet we still survive, even though, you know, with that kind of voting record. But on top of all that, Israel has also managed to annex the Golan Heights against the world's opinion, and also annex East Jerusalem against the world's opinion. And also we fought the Six-Day War, even though the Americans told us not to do it. We've gone against both America and world opinion many, many times, and nothing horrible happened to us. We always hear in the media that if Israel dares to do, you know, go against America or against the world, there'll be a huge tragedy. Well, we've done it many times, and there hasn't been a huge tragedy.
What, Yecheskel, let me strengthen your argument and even say that we were warned also by the United States not to go in, and we were condemned when we took out the Iraqi nuclear reactor, and only later in the Gulf War did America finally thank us for doing it, because if they had to fight a nuclear armed Iraq, it would have been a whole different story in the early 1990s.
Absolutely. It's just another great example of going against world opinion, succeeding, and the world didn't do anything against us. You know, there's a famous sentence by Rabbi Nachman that everybody knows, but it's not exactly quoted correctly. It says, "Kula olam kulo geshel tzar meod velo nefachet klal." The whole world is a narrow bridge, and don't be afraid at all. But really, what Rabbi Nachman says is the whole world is a narrow bridge, velo lehifachet klal. And lehifachet means don't scare yourself, and that's basically what we're doing the whole time. We're always scaring ourselves that if I do this, oh no, what's going to happen to me? So the real enemy is not the outside enemy, it's the inner enemy. It's that voice that tells us that we can't do it, that we're not strong enough, that we're not capable. And if we would only realize how strong we really are, how much power Judaism has and the Jewish people have. And one good example is the Jewish roots of America. We all look at America as being our supporter, and we can't do anything without America supporting us. But it's really the opposite. America can't do anything without us. Because if we look at the roots of America, if we look at their history, the original pilgrims who came to America saw themselves as B'nai Israel. They saw themselves as the new Jews who were leaving Egypt, and they were coming to America, which was the new promised land. And if you look at the American universities, the greatest American universities, they all taught Hebrew, and they had a great emphasis on the Old Testament, as they called it. And even today, we can see Jewish and Hebrew logos on the most popular and most important American universities, such as Yale and Harvard. Yale, for instance, has the symbol of the Kohen Gadol on their university logo. So we don't need to be afraid of America. We need to realize that America's strength comes from the same place that we draw our strength from our Judaism.
I want to say I'm just going to name off the head of the United States of America. Name him.
The head of the United States of America?
Yes.
Joe Biden?
Yes. The head of Canada?
Trudeau.
The head of France?
Macron.
And the head of Britain, the UK?
The UK now is Khan. Was his name Khan or something?
So he's an Indian guy, I think, right?
Right. Okay.
And,
yeah.
And then you've got Cameron, who is coming on and telling Israel how we have to fuel and feed the Nazis of today as well. When I look at these are the top leadership of the entire world. And when I look at these people and I see who they are, and I put, now again, I want to state this, I am not a fan of Benjamin Netanyahu. I think that he's too weak. I could be. I wish I was. I want to be. But unfortunately, he hasn't shown the strength and the what we need as a leader. But even saying that, I can say that I think he is heads above Macron and Trudeau and Biden and all of these world leaders today. He is above them. And if we just looked at ourselves in the mirror and saw the lion instead of the mouse, he really could, if he would just say, you know what, this world is a disgusting, crazy world that is asking us to keep evil people alive so they can go another day, make another October 7th. And let me remind everybody who's listening to the show, even this week in Iran, they're not just screaming death to Israel. They're screaming right afterwards, death to America. You understand that we are just the canary in the coal mine. First, it's the Saturday people, and then it's the Sunday people. First, it's the little Satan, Israel, and then they say it. It's not us. It's not me saying it even. It's them saying it, and then the big Satan, America. They are after you, and if you don't realize it, and you're going to hold Israel back, you are going to be next. And I want to remind people that all of these crazies, and I call them zombies, that are marching down the streets in the United States, that are waving the Palestinian flag and are for Hamas, and they're saying, we are Hamas, and there's going to be another 10,000 October 7th on you. And they are burning, by the way, saw this on Fox News this week, they themselves are burning the American flag on American streets and yelling, death to America. They're marching down your streets. They're not marching down my streets here in Israel. You have got to watch out.
A lot of the Jews in America support the left, which supports all this hostility to Israel, which is unfortunate. Hopefully the Jews of America will wake up and realize that they're supporting the wrong side in this
The liberal Jews, but the majority of the Torah observant Jews in America do not support this or Biden, or they're much more conservative, and they would be Trump voters, and they are Trump voters. And but my point here is that Netanyahu, if he would just take the lead and say, we're not listening to this crazy madness anymore to feed and fuel enemies that want to kill innocent men and women and children, not just in Israel, but in the United States, also in Europe. They've got cells, terror cells all over the world, the Hamas and Hezbollah, et cetera. And he would just take the lead and say, we are going to do what you in the West are too afraid to do, for whatever your interests are.
You know, I heard him compare himself to, I think it was like, I forget where I heard that, it was like in an interview, it might have been with Jonathan Pollard, Benjamin Netanyahu, what, you know, Hebrew king do you relate to? And it was Saul.
That's interesting, because he's Benjamin and is from the house of Yosef. Anyways, I also wanted to talk about that what we're going through right now is a period just like the time between the kingdoms of Shaul and David, Saul and David. And there's Mashiach ben Yosef, which is connected to the kingdom of Shaul, and there's Mashiach ben David, which is, of course, to David HaMelech. And one was to build up, Shaul built up basically the secular state and the physical part of the country. And then after that is prepared, then we can, just like a glass, we can pour in the water, which is the spirit of Israel. And that's the stage we're at right now, where David is taking over from Shaul. And unfortunately, according to the Tanakh, there was a lot of
depression
of David. Mm.
And David is David. We have a lot of listeners that are listening from all over the world. They don't know Hebrew, so we're going to translate when we say our Hebrew words. I want to read this. This is from a listener who's writing and saying, in Tamar, I tried calling in, but the line was busy. As many Americans are praying for Israel and the Jewish people, we need you all to be praying for our election in the United States, praying that President Donald Trump wins, that the Democrats and their cronies, China doesn't interfere and steal the elections, as Trump has already shown he will be an ally worthy of his word. Then Israel can trust America to stand by and support them. That's the way. This is from Tara Nancy. I just want to comment here. Thank you. First of all, thank you for your comment. But second of all, it's not that Israel needs to trust America to stand by it, but America needs to trust in God and know that the Tanakh, the Bible, says those who bless Israel will be blessed. Those who curse Israel will be cursed. And it's not a threat. It's just a consequence. It's just a fact. And
people should be standing. You're absolutely right. I want to mention something very, very interesting that people don't notice. America started as a highly religious country. The first people who founded America were very, very religious. And yet in Israel, it was just the opposite. The founding fathers were mainly socialists and communists. And yet as history progresses, we see America becoming less and less religious, less and less believing in God. And Israel is just the opposite. We're becoming more and more religious, more and more believing in God. And that's not by accident. We're seeing one rise and one fall at the same time. Mm.
This is true. Israel is really, I feel like we're close to the redemption, and we see the world splitting up into either Bible believing people or secular people who are like the modern day Tower of Babel people who want to be God. They're going to decide what's right and wrong, what's moral and what's immoral, and we see where they're going with this, crazy, I don't know if I'm a boy or a girl, etc. Somebody was saying also this week, I remember, you see these queers marching for Hamas, and somebody was saying, how do you think Hamas is going to take it when one of these people would come there and say, well, I'm gender fluid. Hamas would string them up in a second. These people are so... Right. Ignorant. What can I say?
It's insane. What you're basically talking about is what's called the Red-Green Alliance. And it's happening all over the world where far leftist atheists are joining together with fundamentalist Muslims. And they're forming...
an alliance.
A covenant of the extremists against the center. And the center is mainly moderate Judaism and Israeli society. And we even see that here in Israel. When we had the last... Before this current government, we had the far left in Israel joining together with the Islamist parties, Ram. And that was just insane because you had people who were even on the religious left and they were joining together with the fundamentalist Muslims, all against Bibi and the religious and the Haredim. And you saw it here in Israel, the extremist socialists together with the Muslims against the moderates. And that's basically what's going on all over the world today, whether it's China, which is joining together with Iran, or the demonstrations that are happening throughout America right now, which are leftists and Muslims together against the Jews and many Christians as well.
Mm. Matt, any last question for Yecheskel Lang?
No, it's so fascinating to watch. And by the way, I tell my family all the time in America, I'm more worried about them than I am for us. And really, when you look at it, you know, the whole Red-Green Alliance, you could also talk about that. You could also just reduce that to good versus evil, right? So look at the mess in America. And at this crazy time where you're basically forced to accept almost every Torah abomination as normal or you will be canceled, it's not too difficult to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yecheskel, any last thing you want to say before we say goodbye?
No, but first of all, thank you so much for having me on. Coming after Jonathan Pollard is a great honor, and also being on your show tomorrow, I'm a huge fan of you and what you do.
Thank you.
We've got to remain positive, and the Geulah can come about in a good way without huge wars and all that, but we have to remain strong. And remember that if we think positive, it'll come about positive.
Amen. It should be. Thank you so much. Yecheskel Lang, where can people follow you?
I don't really have any online presence, but I do have a book. I just wrote a book called The Jewish Conspiracy. It deals with the common Hebrew roots of the world's diverse civilizations. And they could find that on Amazon. And I hope to be on again and share more of my thoughts.
Repeat the title again.
The Jewish Conspiracy by Yecheskel Lang, and Y-E-H-E-Z-K-E-L. You can find it on Amazon.
We'll try to link to that. We'll try to link to that and put that on the show where the show is podcasted.
That would be great.
All right, Yecheskel Lang, thank you so much. Again, he's a veteran Israeli journalist and filmmaker. He used to work, I believe, at Arutsheva as well, IsraelNationalNews.com. And he's now a freelancer, and it was good to have you on. Thank you so much, Yecheskel.
Thank you so much.
All right, Matt, we have the holiday of Passover coming up. It is the holiday of our freedom from being slaves in Egypt, where God takes us out and brings us to the promised land, and that's the land of Israel. And he didn't take out the Arabs or the PLO or the Hamas or the Hezbollah and bring them here. He brought the Hebrews. Go open your Bibles, everyone. The people who speak Hebrew, those are the Jewish people. And he brought
the Jews
us
from
here.
Judea.
That's right. That's right. And I want to share, just before we go, I want to share something that my son brought up at our Shabbat table the other day. And he was saying that the Passover holiday, where we have the last plague, which is the firstborn of Egypt, we're going to die, and if the Jews wanted to be protected from this as well, we were to go out and kill the god of Egypt, which was a sheep. They used to worship sheep, and we were to take the blood and paint it on our doorpost, and the angel of death was to pass over all of those homes that had the blood there. Now this shows. This wasn't just some symbolic act. It was a huge act because it was in defiance. What do we learn? That we were showing that, hey, we are not pagans like you. We do not worship sheep. In fact, even though we're living in your land as slaves, that you've enslaved us and you have power over us, we are going to take your God and we are going to slaughter it. And we're going to put the blood on our doorpost. And you have to imagine the strength and the courage that our ancestors had to do such an audacious thing in someone else's land, in the land where they believe in this God. Because you could think, wow, those Egyptian soldiers are going to come busting down our doors and they're going to pull us out and they're going to slit our throats.
And then wait. We're going to paint our doors with its blood, and then we're going to cook your God and eat it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. So this is what we learned. But this is the thing that my son brought up. He was saying it's not just that we had to kill their God. We had to kill our God, in the sense that there were many Jews who straddled. We believed in God, but we also were so entrenched in Egyptian society and culture that we also would believe in it or pray to it or hold it as something holy. So for us to take what we held holy and slaughter it, we were showing the real God of Israel. We reject this God now. We only believe in you, God. We're not going to straddle it and do both. We are rejecting this God. We only believe in you, and our faith is with you. And we know that in the end, only one-fifth of the Jewish people left with Moses, with Moshe, and came into the promised land to build our new homeland here that God had promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So we all need to do a self-examination, hopefully on this Passover holiday, to think, what do we have in our lives that we are more or less worshiping? Like, is it the style, the culture, the mode? Oh, we're running after, you know, even sports, whatever it is that is taking our time away. Whatever it is that's taking us away from God and serving our purpose here and being holy people and good people and wholesome people and not wasting our time on what we say in Yiddish, Norschkeit, like nonsense, right? Putting so much, you know, so much time and energy and money on things that don't matter. I see what goes on, because I lived in California, to see some of the people I knew there, all these operations they're doing in order to try to look young, and you know, it's like it's a sin to grow old in that society, and it's sad, you know. I mean, everybody wants to look their best, so look your best at your age. That's it, you know. But like, to put all these things in your face and you know, like, we got to reexamine our ways and say, what is going to make us a better person at what really, really matters in our lives, and what really doesn't have the value that we think it does, and to kill those gods that we're running after, and just attach ourselves to the true God, that created the universe, that created all of us, and be good to each other and use our energies and resources for good and making the world a better place. That's what I want to leave you all with. Matt, last word?
Chag Sameach. Try to think about also, you know, all the things that we're blessed to have in our lives, all the things that, and actually moving forward, really what we can also do to improve ourselves to help bring about redemption, because we're clearly in the home stretch.
Amen. Amen.
So,
all right. And with that, I want to wish all of our listeners a very happy and kosher Passover Pesach holiday. And our schedule, again, is going to be a bit off. We will be having shows during the intermediate days of Passover, but the staff is basically going to be off for the holiday. If there's any important announcements, we'll try to come on and give those to you. Thank you, everybody, for listening to Israel News Talk Radio, and share it with your friends.